This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the channel and welcome back to another edition of the Spurs Chat podcast. In this edition, of course, we will be talking about the North London Derby. The game has just finished at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Spurs 2, Arsenal 3. Of course, Arsenal had a 3-0 lead with boos at half-time. Tottenham Hotspur managed to get two goals back. But sadly, we couldn't salvage a draw or even get the win here at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. We are live on YouTube, we are live on X and Facebook, so please do let us know where you're watching from and give your thoughts on today's game. Now, of course, as I said, it finished Tottenham Hotspur 2, Arsenal 3. Højbjerg putting Arsenal 1-0 up after 15 minutes with an own goal. Saka doubling Arsenal's lead on 27 minutes. Havertz putting Arsenal 3-0 up after 38 minutes. Romero getting one back on 64 minutes, and Heung-min Son grabbing a penalty 3 minutes from time. Now, the stats from the game: Spurs had 62% possession to Arsenal's 38%. Shots: Spurs had 14 to Arsenal's 9. Shots on target: Spurs 3, Tottenham 2, Arsenal 3. Corners: Spurs had 8 to Arsenal 6. And fouls: Spurs 12, Arsenal 16. I can hardly get my words out. What a game that was. We have got three very special guests as normal. We've got actor Ricky Norwood back with us. Ricky, we'll get into the football in a minute, but how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, my friend. Not too bad. Let's get into it. Let's get it on. Let's make it happen. Always good to be back on the channel.
Lovely to have you here. We've also got Holly back with us, of course, Spurs YouTuber. Holly, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I know we'll get into the football in a minute. It's just a bit deflating, isn't it? But great to be back to dissect and have a bit of therapy about it.
Absolutely. Well, joining us for the very first time, and Sonny, I'm so sorry that you're joining us for the first time after a defeat, particularly to our North London rivals. We've got Sonny with us from Sonny Talks Spurs, of course, works for TalkSport as well. Sonny, welcome to the channel. Great to have you here. How are you?
I was so excited ahead of this one, and it's all gone Pete Tong, so you're probably not going to invite me back after this.
Well, Sonny, because it's your first time on the channel, let's get your thoughts on the game first. Spurs 2, Arsenal 3. There were boos at half-time. Fans weren't happy. I know they weren't happy with the officials either. But your take on today's game?
Like many games for Tottenham this season, frustrating, but a different sort of frustrating to last season. You feel like you wait 2 weeks after a disappointing game against Newcastle and you think, you know, the boys will be G'd up for this. And they come out and corners again. I mean, I don't know what Ange has been doing. And I love Ange to bits. So I'm a big fan of Ange, but set pieces, attacking and defensively, have got to be worked on in the summer or, you know, as soon as possible for the running, because it's getting a bit ridiculous now. You know, two goals in that fashion, it's just very, very annoying. And then a third or the second from Saka, you know, Ben Davis, I'll give him his due, you know, he wasn't really meant to be playing if Adoghi was fit. So I felt sorry, but you can't let him cut in on your left. He's an experienced player. And then in the second half, you know, you get your hopes up at the end, hope we can bring it back. But like always, it's a little bit too late. So it's like an Ange Postecoglou game for Tottenham. Your emotions are like a roller coaster. I still have a lot of faith with this team for the future, but we know we're nowhere near the levels of, sadly, Arsenal. You know, they're how many years into this project? 5, 6 nearly. And they are streaks ahead of us. And it really pains me to say that because, you know, there are hated rivals, but, you know, it doesn't take a genius to realise what they've built so far. You know, Rice and players like that spending money. And it goes to show what Tottenham have to do to get to that level, really.
Sonny, were you happy with today's performance, though? Because 3-0 down at half-time, I tell you what, a number of Spurs fans very, very unhappy here at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. A number of them talking about Ange Postecoglou. You know, I'm with you. I think that Ange has done a great job so far here at Spurs in his first season. But it is very worrying the way that we're defending corners. You know, a couple of weeks ago against Newcastle, today, you know, it could have been so many more.
I mean, that's the thing. It's schoolboy stuff, really, isn't it? When you look at the way that we're defending corners, I'm not the biggest fan of zonal marking anyway. I feel like it's old-fashioned to think, you know, someone on the front post, someone on the back post, you know, protecting Vicario and then pick your man up or whatever. But it is just, some of it is just a bit annoying. And when you're not being potent up the other end, like Son misses his chance late in the first half, it's like, it's okay to play this sort of football if we are, you know, seeing it up the other end a bit like, I mean, I'm a bit too young to remember it, but Ozzy Ardiles style football where you're winning games 5-4. But there's issues like the midfield. I think the midfield is just not really helping the defence whatsoever. Again, today I'm thinking, is Højbjerg the right person? Is he going to be shifted on in the summer? Then you have Bentancur, who looked off it as well. Maddison dropping deep and not really creating. There's a lot of issues that need to be ironed out. And, you know, I saw a lot of people, you know, the Ange out sort of stuff comes back in, having a go at Levy and whatnot. So it is sort of, there's so much more to sort out, and it's just frustrating in a game against Arsenal. You know, you think Fulham, Newcastle, we've had a few moments where we've looked off it, and we just think, you know, even like our press at the beginning of the season when we were really good, the forwards were pressing and it looked really good, and that's not even happening anymore. So I don't know what it is. I still can't put my finger on it, and hopefully Holly and Ricky can sort of answer that question, because I'm just not sure what's going on in those areas.
Well, we know when we want positivity, we bring Ricky Norwood on the show.
Jesus.
And Ricky is definitely old enough to remember Ozzy Ardiles football. Ricky, your take on today's game, because that was one hell of a derby.
It was. You know what, for the last couple of weeks, Chris, you know, like we've whether we've been on the pod here, whether we've been together watching the game, you know, I've said it many a time now, it's just too easy to score against us. You know, it's just a little bit too easy. You know, we was missing Udogie today. We know we missed his physicality, his pace, his tenacity. You know, the reverse game, there was a moment where he was struggling with Saka, but then he kind of got to grips with it and he had Saka in his pocket. Do you know what I mean? So It was tough. It was another tough game, you know, and we didn't play that badly. We had two headers off of Romero in the first half, which could have, should have been goals. That offside, bro, I swear to you, it's like even looking at it on the TV and they drew the lines and stuff like that. But the Gunnar, he's like, his body was open and his bottom was out and his left foot, for me, and of course I'm biased, you know, it made Van de Ven onside. But, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. It was a tough first half, man. Going 3-0 down and the way that we done it like that, it was really tough. But the boys, they never stopped fighting. The selection, I know we'll get into the selection and stuff like that, but the selection and the subs that Ange made today, I agreed with. I called for. It was just a really tough one to take, man. It was just another kick in the stomach. But you know what? It's a big assessment on how much work needs to be done in the summer with the transfers, with the tactics. You know, we've got to be a lot more solid. And like Sonny was saying there, you know, the Gooners, they're a well-oiled machine right now. You can see that their defence and their midfield and their attack, they all go together. They all move together. But it's really easy to kind of counter on us, you know, when we've pushed up so far up, all you've got to do is a long diagonal ball to somebody running on the wing, and they're in on us. If it wasn't for Van de Ven as well, especially in that second half, the amount of times that they've done that same move, but Van de Ven just stifled them. You know, his pace, his strength, you know, and his intelligence to defend, you know. So it was a tough one for me, bruv. It was a tough one. It's another failed exam for me. You know, Newcastle was a failed exam. Fulham was a failed exam. You know, this is exam period, and we're failing. We're getting Fs right now, you know. We had good efforts, but we're getting Fs right now. And it's all about how these boys look at themselves, how the management look at themselves, how the set-piece coaching staff look at themselves. And, you know, they've had 2 weeks to work on set-pieces, and we haven't really seen much of a difference. So there's a lot of kind of looking in the mirror and a lot of self-assessment and a lot of humbleness to kind of realize your mistakes, vocalize them, look them in the face, and then challenge and work towards them not being mistakes anymore.
Ricky, do you think the biggest problem today was the fact that Christian Romero is probably our biggest goal threat in front of goal? Because, you know,
absolutely.
You mentioned it there about Romero. You know, your header went wide, a header hit the post, he scored our goal.
Yeah, and he had another header in the second half as well. So he could have had a hat-trick of headed chances plus a goal. Do you know what I mean? He was our biggest threat. I don't think it's a negative that he was our biggest threat. I think it's a positive, the fact that everybody let him go and he was, you know, available and put himself out there. I think it's a measurement of the type of player that we have in Romero, that not only is he there to be a leader at the back, but he's there to be a leader for the whole team, to drag them up, to drag them through, to kind of to put us on the front foot, to change the game for us when nobody else is doing it. And again, it takes a lot of kind of self-recognition from the others that are not doing it. Those like Madders, do you know what I mean? You know, those that are not really putting themselves forward, you know, I think it says a lot about them too. So yes, it kind of surprising that he was our main goal threat today, but again, they didn't really use it to our advantage, you know. A lot of huff and puff, but not much blowing the house down.
Holly, let's get your thoughts on today's game.
Yeah, it's kind of echoing what the boy's saying. It was just very frustrating. I mean, I know it's a lot of ifs and buts, but if Romero scores that header, it hits the post, it's a different game. If Mickey van de Ven isn't offside, it's a different game. I think the most annoying thing for me was shooting ourselves in the foot again with these corners. I just don't know how, A, the players haven't picked it up, B, Ange hasn't picked it up. It hasn't worked for weeks and we're still doing it. And for me, to concede two corners the way we did in any game is inexcusable. But in a North London derby, this should have never been the case. And I think that's the thing. And I go on about it all the time, but just go back to basics. Have a man front post, have a man back post, have a man in between Vicario. And I think it was the second corner where Ben White was, that's where Havertz scored. And Ben White, there was no one in between him. And you're thinking, okay, if Vicario's got this in him where he's not maybe strong enough to push that player off, then take that out of the equation and put a man in between them. I still don't understand how that's not the case. But again, in hindsight, I'm thinking the performance wasn't awful. Yeah, it wasn't great. But I think if we didn't concede those two corners, we could have been a totally different story. It's just, again, we love to make it difficult for ourselves. And when it's a game like this with so much riding on it, it just went to pot. And I appreciate the way the boys came out second half. They realised that they made a mistake in those corners. Okay, they were still a bit shaky when those corners came in, but we were attacking again on the kind of a front foot with Deki, I think, leading the line and Johnson again. I just love the way Johnson goes at players, and we don't have enough of that within our squad. So it was frustrating. And for me, it's just annoying the way we conceded those two corners for me.
Polly, talking about set pieces, earlier on in the season, as Postecoglou said, I don't separate set pieces from anything else we do. In terms of the team we want to be, it all hopefully links in. He was talking about not having a specific set piece coach, because, of course, we let the set piece coach leave shortly after Antonio Conte went. Do you think that was a big mistake?
I think so. The way we've conceded so many corners, it just proves that actually maybe we do need a set piece coach, because it's not working. And for me, that's the biggest thing. We're leaking so many goals at the minute, and it's going to dampen our confidence. We're going to know someone's going to stand on Vaccaro, but do we do anything about it? No, we just let them do it. And I think that's the most irritating thing. So I hope we talk about players coming in. Hopefully we get that set piece man in, because as much as I love Ange Ball and okay, the stubbornness of the way he wants to play, changing set pieces is something that he needs to not be stubborn about. We need to sort that out, because that's not having a corner or defending a corner or taking a corner. That's not a style of play. That's just, you're going to take this corner, we're going to make the most of it. I think that's something that we kind of need to separate between Ange's style and defending a corner. Like, those two things don't go hand in hand. They're two separate things. And I think that's something we need to kind of work out in hopefully before the summer, but I don't see that happening before then.
Sonny, that's exactly what we're going to talk about, that exact point. You know, when we conceded goals like we did at Newcastle a couple of weeks ago, 15 days to prepare for a game like this. I know sometimes, you know, Ange even spoke about the rhythm, because Arsenal played four times in that time that we didn't play any matches. But are you surprised the way that we defended corners again today? Because nothing seemed to have changed.
I just think, to me, it's what I've said already and what Holly is alluding to. It is basics when it comes to football. I just don't understand how... And when we see up the other end, we can't even get past the first man. So the fact that Arsenal knew to draw the players into that front post area, and it's been happening for months. It's been happening since Manchester City in the FA Cup. It doesn't take a genius to realise that this needs to be sorted. And I don't know how that is outlined on the training ground, how that hasn't been sorted at least since Newcastle, because it's happening one a game. I'm fearful we might as well be giving away penalties, because corners are like penalties.
Sonny, sorry to stop you there, but going into this game, we all knew that Arsenal had scored more goals from corners than any other team in the Premier League.
I feel like they're four ahead of second place. I think Sky showed the graphic during the game. And it just makes me laugh, because when I think of, you know, when we played Manchester United at Old Trafford early in the season and they had the similar thing and we were just berating them from corners and had it on a plate. I don't see how we're not seeing that. I just cannot get my head around. It seems like such a basic thing to iron out. And you look at our squad and they're not necessarily small players, but, you know, even like Mickey van der Ven, is he an aerial threat from a corner defensively? Romero, I feel like he should be. It's just very confusing. I'm not sure what the situation is. I feel like I need to talk to some Celtic fans and see if this was a similar situation at their club or any of Ange's Australian clubs, because it's just obvious that, especially when you play teams like Everton, Brentford, who are going to punish you from one set pieces and two corners, you just got to get a bit more savvy to it, because we're losing a lot of points from this. Like Everton, 2-2 early in the season, last minute free kick, it goes in. Teams are just going to be able to do this week in, week out now. And as I say, a corner is becoming a penalty. We're literally like fearful that it's going in every time. It did against Newcastle. It did against Arsenal. It's getting ridiculous, to be fair.
Can I just say, there's over 2,000 people watching on YouTube right now. So if you are watching, please do hit that subscribe button. Ricky, let's come to you. Ange Postecoglou, before the game in the matchday programme, said setbacks are part of our growth as a team. Sometimes that growth can be painful and you have to embrace it and prepare for the next challenge. How are you feeling about Ange Postecoglou now, Ricky? Because, of course, when we've recorded these podcasts earlier on in the season, we were all on an absolute high, especially after the 10, you know, opening games. How are you feeling right now?
Do you know what, bro? I've still got every faith in Ange, and I'll tell you why. We've had Mourinho, Nuno and Conte, right? And there have been periods of play in which it's gone well, but the majority it's not gone well at all. They wasn't coaches that kind of play or kind of think the Tottenham way. Do you know what I mean? And especially the way that we want to see football played. You know, you got to remember back to last year when we was on Arnie Slot's case. Do you know what I mean? We were going for Arnie Slot and we're putting all our eggs into one basket and we're like, all right, and cool. I started watching the videos about him. I started like researching his tactics, the way that he plays, his side. You know, I love Dutch football anyway. And, you know, and we're all on going to get him. And then he came. We didn't reject him. We've got to remember this. He came out and he was like, nah, you know what? Actually, I want to stay here. There was a point in time that he would have done it if we would have paid a high compensation, but I think a couple of days passed and he was like, no, I want to stay here. And he signed a new deal and he stayed there. Now he's going to become Liverpool manager, right? We was in dire straits. We were on the verge of losing our best ever goal scorer, you know, our talisman. And we was in a period of flux and transition. You know, I thought we was a sinking ship after last year. And Big Al just come in. And when he did come in, I didn't really have much faith. Do you know what I mean? I was looking and I was just like, you know, I was like one of those fans that was like, well, you know, okay, he's managed Celtic. It's only a two-team league. You know, there was a full of doubt in me. But when he came in, the way he speaks, the way that we saw those first 10 games, and I know we hark back to those first 10 games, but they were phenomenal. We saw the rhythm. We saw the momentum. We saw the energy. We saw the fight. We saw the high press. We saw everybody kind of invested in this way of playing and kind of going forward under Ange. And then we've had a lot of disruption. Yes, it's an excuse, but yes, it's also a reason. And yes, it's also reality that these things happen, that we had many injuries. We had a bumpy road. We had internationals. We had Asia Cup. We had Africa Cup. We had ACLs that we had to deal with, ankle problems. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was a ton of things. And right now, you know, with the majority of the squad fit, I was expecting, and I assume that a lot of people were expecting us to kind of go back to that form of those first 10 games. And we just haven't clicked into gear. You know, that Fulham game was a warning for me. I said, you know, we didn't turn up at all in that game. There was some voodoo on Fulham's goal, which kind of prevented us from scoring, even when we thought it was kind of nailed on to score. The post, the bar, everything. It just wasn't happening. And I said at that point, you know, this has got to be the mistake that you make right now to learn from it and to kind of rectify the mistakes that we've been making for a while. And it didn't really happen. It hasn't really happened. For me, Ange is still the man. For me, the way that he talks about how to play, the way in which to play, also when it comes down to recruitment, the fact that character and integrity is a massive part of why he will go after a player, a fact that he wants a player that wants to come to Tottenham for this challenge, to fight against all of the kind of hoodoos that we've had for year in, year out. He wants somebody to come in and play for Tottenham, not just because we've got Champions League or not just because of A, B or C. So all of those things are massive positives to me. It wasn't always going to be positive the whole season. There were always going to be bumps in the road. He has said that the whole time. You know, even when we've had great performances, he has not been 100% happy with those performances. So we know where we're at. We've seen an improved performance over the period of over the season compared to last season, but there are still many holes in our game, and this is what it's about right now. It's about seeing those holes, like I say, recognizing those holes, and filling them, and making a conscious effort to kind of put money on the table, but also the right characters and the right profile of players, and then couple that with the tactics, and even if that's coaches, we know that Ange came in without a bunch of coaches. He inherited Ryan Mason and brought in Jedinak and works with what he's got. But maybe we need to speak to Gianni Vio again and ask him to come back, you know. Maybe we need to look at some other type of defensive set-piece coach or offensive set-piece coaches as well. But I've got every faith that he's going to do it. I've got every faith that he's the man to give the money to and for us to go forward under him. We haven't seen the best of it right now, but I'm sure the best is yet to come.
Ange Postecoglou has just said it's disappointing. We allowed them way too easy access to our goal. They only got there three or four times and they scored three goals. They actually had three shots on target and they scored three. Ange Postecoglou then wanted to say it's not acceptable and we paid a price for it. Polly, are you surprised? When I'm going to ask you the same question, really, as what I asked Ricky and Sonny about it. When you look at that Newcastle game a couple of weeks ago, and yes, we've spoken about it already. Ryan Mason and Jedinak are in charge of the set pieces in training. Are you surprised that it wasn't different today?
I don't know what they've been doing. with the time off. I know it sounds really to the point, and I am really frustrated, but I just don't know what it is. Like you guys alluded to at the start, Arsenal scored lots of goals from corners, and we know corners defending and attacking are our weakness, but it seems like we've done nothing about it. And I think that's the most frustrating thing, because people sit here and say the game, for me, I think the game was done after those corners. Yes, we came back and we managed to get some goals on it. But I'm thinking, if those weren't a thing, we wouldn't have been two goals down in that kind of sense, because we would have managed to clear the corner, because we would have picked our man up and we would have got rid of the ball. And it just blows my mind that this isn't a sticking point for Ange and a team of coaches, whether they be professionals in managing set pieces. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that it's not working the way we're doing it, because all of us fans see it. And you see it even in grassroots level. I know the Premier League isn't grassroots level, but in grassroots level, you know how to defend a corner. So why don't these boys do it themselves? And for me, I also want to take accountability. If I'm the player that's let that goal go in because I haven't decided to run or track and see where that person is in that zone, then I'm going to be like, right, I'm going to pick him up, because I clearly can't track him in the zonal marking. So I'll pick him up man for man. And it just blows my mind, honestly. And again, it's just, how do we manage to overcome that if we're not going to change it from now until the end of the season? For me, if today hasn't been, right, okay, we need to switch it up, boys, because it's not working, then I don't know what's going to force them to change.
Sonny, let's come to you. Ange Postecoglou in his press conference has just said, I've got to get what's into him, talking about Christian Romero, into some of the others. The Athletic have just reported that Ange Postecoglou was extremely angry in the press conference. And I must say, I've uploaded a video straight after the game of Postecoglou and the players walking off the pitch. And I tell you what, I don't think I've ever seen Ange looking that down and upset after a game, particularly a defeat. Sonny, how are you feeling about Ange Postecoglou right now?
I mean, I still back him. I still think, I echo a lot what Ricky was saying. I back him and think it can work under him. It's just there are moments where it is frustrating. And I look at some of the players today, and if all four of us were playing in a North London derby, I feel like we would have given better performances than some of the players, because it's in our hearts. It's, you know, playing the Arsenal is, you know, it's one of those things. We look at the fixture schedule, when are we playing them home and away? We'd be G'd up for it. We'd be running around. We'd be putting effort in. But today, there was just a few individuals who just were off it. And Romero, I mean, you mentioned him there. Romero was one of the ones who, you know, a couple of last season, we'd be saying, he's going to get sent off here. He's going to get sent off here. But he was sort of leading by example as a vice-captain, which was good to see. But yeah, going back to the question about Ange, it's hard to judge it in the modern managerial sphere, because we've seen so many managers. Like, look at Klopp this year with him announcing his departure and how Liverpool have handled games and how he hasn't been able to get the best out of players like Nunes and Szoboszlai or anyone like that. And at the moment, I feel he still hasn't got one, the squad that he wants, the team that he wants. And you know, I still feel like there's a lot of putting it on him. And I feel like there is parts where you can blame him for certain things, like the set pieces and the defensiveness of it. Like, I still think if Maddison isn't performing, don't be afraid to drop him. Like, there are moments where I see that and I'm like, Ange should probably, you know, have some cojones and like make a big decision like that, which he has been with, like, you know, subbing them off early. But we've not really got anyone sometimes to, you know, we took Son off against Newcastle, we had no attacking impotence. I feel like we need to bring Richie back into the team straight away. I feel like when he came on, it made such a big difference. I don't think Son's a striker. I think all that talk early in the season that he's a striker, I think was a bit, you know, a bit wishy-washy. I feel like he's the perfect winger for Spurs. But with Ange, I just think, yeah, what Ricky was saying, I back him. He still needs, like, we need a new defensive six. I think we need a number nine or a winger. It's so early, like, to judge it. I feel like this time next season, I feel like some of the conversations like this should be being had. I think even at his previous clubs, there was a few Tonkins at Celtic in his first season. And a lot of Australian fans in my comment section always say, second season, judge Ange, because that's when he's finally got his teeth into it. So it's hard to judge, especially after an emotional game like a North London derby.
Sonny, I feel like a lot of what we're discussing today, we discussed on a podcast after the Newcastle game a couple of weeks ago. But I suppose the big question I want to ask is, do you think he will change?
Do you know what it is? It's the way I watch us, and I can see what Ange Ball is trying to be, but we're moving it too slow. We're not being like there's certain moments where we're not shooting like at the edge of the area. I haven't seen James Maddison let one go in like a couple of weeks. And it is almost like, I don't know if this is Ange's sort of philosophy or like a bit Pep inspired of like trying to make that perfect goal of getting to the byline and like cutting it back and someone on the back post. But it's hard to know what, like, you know, is he as stubborn as people assume he is? Is he just like, because it does work.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is if we drew that game today or even won the game, even going 3-0 down at half time, are people going to be doubting the way that he sets up and his system? Because he has been successful everywhere he's gone. We know that Ange Postecoglou has said a number of times, I will not be changing the way that I play and the way that I set up.
I mean, that's the thing. When it comes to, like, if you look at the stats and the metrics of all the defenders, and if you even say to some people, who has been your team of the season for defenders, a lot of people would pick out individual Tottenham defenders. But as a unit, they get judged differently. And I just still think it's down to there's no defensive cover in that midfield area. I don't, like, Basuma's not really worked there since the beginning of the season. Bentancourt, Saar, it's hard to know how that sets up. And you just have to watch Arsenal in transition against us today. And we're just getting overrun. There's no point of having a midfield there at some cases because they're just literally going past us. And you look at Rice and Partey and Odegaard in their midfield, and it just seems to work amazing in tandem. And it's taken a while for Arsenal to, you know, they shifted Xhaka out to Leverkusen and they brought Rice in this year. So it has taken them time to develop that. But there are moments where you've seen it works of, like, you know, Adogi and Poro, how they invert, and we've had some joy of it this season. But there have been games where, like, even West Ham, I'm sitting there and we have Werner and Johnson. And you know that West Ham are going to sit back and low block it. So what's the point of having pace? Because you're not going to beat them over the top. So there are moments where I'm like, and just change it up. Like, you know, last minute of a game, just maybe take it to a corner. There are those frustrations. But it is almost like, to me, when I see some of the reactions, it is almost like if we had brought it back today, are those similar conversations being had? It's so hard to judge because I want to remain positive about this because I look back to last season under Conte, and not to go over trodden ground, but some of that stuff was dire. And he was meant to be a defensive coach and we conceded that many goals. And people say, but he didn't have a defender, he had Longley and all that. But Andrew was backed because he sees a long-term thing at this club and he wants to stay. Whereas Conte just wanted to bugger off whenever he had the opportunity to, and that was Southampton. And he, you know, he signed his own P45 that day.
Well, I tell you what, I think Ange is probably expecting a huge summer transfer window because he said a number of times now, including on Friday, that in 12 months' time, i.e. the end of next season, he wants to be challenging for the Premier League title. Ricky, let's come to you. Spurs remain fifth in the Premier League table. We've got 60 points from 33 games. We've got 5 games left, playing Chelsea away, Liverpool away, Burnley at home, Manchester City at home, and then finishing Bramall Lane away at Sheffield United. 7 points away from the top 4 now. We've only got 2 games in hand, so it is in Aston Villa's hands to secure Champions League football. If it was Europa League football, Ricky, would you be disappointed?
No, bro. I mean, did you see where we finished last year? This is what I'm saying.
Exactly.
We were a sinking ship last year. So if we finish in a Europa League position, I think that's still an improvement on last year. And it still gives us European football where we can continue to build momentum, build the philosophy and keep pushing forward. On Aston Villa, you know, they haven't been Man City outstanding, right? But they've been consistently good throughout this season. So really and truly, they deserve their position right now. They deserve to be, what are they, in the semis of the conference, I think it is. They, you know, from where they were to where they are right now under Emery, yeah, they've done a tremendous job. So right now, they're pushing, they've got their momentum, they're on a roll. Do you know what I mean? They're believing in their manager and their philosophy. They've got really good people, players in really good positions that can facilitate that philosophy and execute that philosophy, and people that the manager trusts as well. And they've been good. For me, okay, I watched two games in the 2 weeks off, right? I watched Bayer Leverkusen play Werder Bremen. And I watched the second half of this game. And this is the game in which if they won it, and they've gone unbeaten the whole season, as we all know. But if they won it, then they would have been crowned champions on that day. And when I watched them, it was very, very, very close to what Ange Ball at its best looks like. The rotations, the overlaps, the inverted wingbacks, the using the whip, the interchangeable players from interchangeable different positions. The only difference that they had was they had two recognized center forwards that they used, one that could hold up the ball and one that was a runner in behind. They absolutely destroyed Werder Bremen in the second half. And they've got very similar players to us as well. I also watched them against West Ham in the Europa. And the first half against West Ham, they were terrible. And a bit like us when we're terrible. But in the second half, again, Xabi Alonso got them G'd up and he made some very pivotal substitutions. And they went on to win the game. They went on to continue playing that way and then go on and win the game. And I think with Ange, it's not about changing. The philosophy and the way in which we play will always stay the same. But there will be adaptations. There will be variations. He's already said when he changes certain personnel that that's almost adapting it in itself. Do you know what I mean? So we all know, we haven't got Ange Postecoglou's squad right now. We've got a good first 11 that can do a good job, but we haven't got the squad that can fulfill the expectations that he's put on this squad. But I have every faith that it will come. And if you look at Bayer Leverkusen, they've gone the whole season unbeaten. And I'm not saying that next season that's what's going to happen to us, but there will definitely be an improved reaction. And once these players have learned from these massive mistakes now, these failings, do you know what I mean? Because it was only a couple of weeks ago, Maddison was talking about how he was disappointed that he wasn't in the title race himself. And I love that attitude and I love him saying that. But today and games like today is where you show up. Today and games like today is where you show your class. You know, he didn't grab the game by the scruff of the neck today. It was Romero. You know, Sonny, love him to bits. And he was always there, but he didn't grab the game by the scruff of the neck today either. You know, there were good bits and pieces of play from him, but he wasn't like Captain Fantastic, how we've seen him be in previous weeks. So, you know, there's a lot to do. And this is what I'm saying. There's a lot to do with these players about looking in the mirror, about recognizing their own mistakes, recognizing their own holes in their game and seeing what they can do collectively to eradicate them. But Bayer Leverkusen is a great example of playing Ange Ball and getting the right results and being unbeaten. Do you know what I mean? Going out there and achieving things. Xabi Alonso has not had long. When he picked up Bayer Leverkusen, they were in the bottom three of the Bundesliga. He had half a season with them and this is his full season under them. And they've gone unbeaten. Now, what type of Tottenham are we going to see next year when Ange grabs them lot by the scruff of the neck and goes, oi, what are we doing here? This ain't my type of squad. This ain't my type of play. This ain't the way that we want to go forward in life. This is the way that we go forward in life. Now, you either jump on the bus or see you later. And I think that he is the man to do that. I don't want to go searching for another manager again. I don't want to start a new rebuild again. I don't want to get rid of half of the squad again because he doesn't fit the new manager's philosophy. I believe in this manager's philosophy. I believe that this is the way to go forward. I believe this will be the way that we find success finally. Do you know what I mean? But there's a lot of work to be done to make that happen.
Holly, let's come to you. I just want to get your reaction on a couple of quotes from Ange here after the game. Talking about Arsenal, he said they're a team that deals with the details well and we aren't. Talking about set pieces, he said disappointing. If I thought set pieces were the answer to us bridging the gap, I'd put all my energy into that.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Gonna wind me up, man. I try to be positive, and I've been positive all this season, because don't get me wrong, I still think Ange is the man for the job. Kind of echoing what Ricky said, I think, as cliche as it sounds, Rome isn't built in a day. And I think that we all need to remember that last season was absolutely dire, because I think we have very short-term memories. And I think we are on a progression. And I know people, I've seen the chat and people saying, what progression? I mean, have you forgotten last season already? And it is frustrating because, again, those two corners don't go in, then the game isn't as stretched as it was, I don't think. And for Ange to come out and kind of say that isn't really the gap, I think it is. I really do, because we're seeing this pattern week in, week out. And I sound like a broken record, but we all know it's corners that are our Achilles heel at the moment. And we are conceding so many. And like Sonny said earlier, also not really producing anything from attacking corners either. So I don't really understand how Ange doesn't necessarily see that. That's probably my only concern in this Ange ball kind of thing from Ange as a manager, that he can't really see that there is a problem with defending and taking corners, because they're quite... clearly is. And that was evident today and in past games. I think more so today, because it was so important not to concede corners the way we did. And it's happened. So for Ange to come out and say that it's not really a problem, so to speak, I generally think it is. And I'm hoping that when he has a bit of time to digest the game, that he actually does realise, hang on a minute, looking at the facts and previous games and today, that it is a problem. And he does kind of dissect that and work it out and takes that forward into to the next training session.
Polly, let's stay with you, because let's talk about Tottenham's starting 11 today. Of course, Ange Postecoglou made three changes: Højbjerg, Kulusevski and Davis coming in for Bissouma, Johnson and Udogi. So the starting 11 was as follows: Vicario, Poro, Van de Ven, Romero, Davis, Bentancur, Højbjerg, Madison, Kulusevski, Son and Timo Werner. Subs today: Austin, Royale, Dragushin, Bissouma, Sarr, Lo Celso, Brian Hill, Johnson and Richarlison. Now, before the game, Ange Postecoglou said that Kulusevski and Højbjerg started the game today because they've been very impressive during training for the last couple of weeks. Were you surprised by the changes you made today?
I don't think so, because I think lots of us as Spurs fans have sat and thought that Bissouma hasn't really been on his A game. And I thought Højbjerg, when he has come on in recent weeks, that he has done the job and he knows what a North London derby means. I think today was something he's played in every North London derby he has in his career at Tottenham. So that kind of proves to me was probably the right call. I mean, as the game went on, obviously with that first corner where he heads it into our own goal, maybe not, but hindsight's a wonderful thing. And in terms of Kulusevski, there's been a lot of criticism of Kulusevski, but he really gets it when he's going forward, and especially in a game like this. And I think Kulusevski today played brilliantly. I think for me, if I was going to tweak it slightly, I would have preferred Sonny out on the left and Richarlison through the middle. I think there was times today where we were putting balls into the box, and we're thinking, well, who's going to header it? And that would have been perfect for Richarlison. And as we saw when he came on, there was a bit more energy up the top. We know that Sonny likes to cut in. But I think there was only one time when Sonny had that chance that he broke the lines of Saliba through the middle. And that was one time in the whole game. So it would have been better, I think, to have Sonny out wide and then have Richarlison through the middle. But apart from that, I don't think I would have changed it, purely on, like Ange said, that maybe, I mean, we don't see training, but the way they've been performing and the way that we've seen Bissouma performing hasn't been great. I think it was probably the best call at the start of the game when I saw it, bar that Richarlison kind of switch up.
I'm sorry to keep going on about set pieces, but Ange Postecoglou, I think, has been questioned a number of times in the press conference today by journalists. He was asked on whether the set pieces are the reason for Tottenham's problems at the moment. His answer was, I think it's a bigger, broader picture than that. But our defensive set pieces for those two goals were very poor. But there is a lot more to fix than that. Sonny, let's carry on talking about the starting 11. Were you surprised not to see Richarlison back in the starting 11 today?
Maybe he's still not match fit, but then again, when he came on, he did look impressive. I think Holly hit the nail on the head. How many times are we going to put a ball into the mix without having someone capable to head it in, unlike Richarlison? I'd put him straight in for the Chelsea game, especially because even though he's questionable when people say, like, oh, we could have got sent off against Gabriel, he does offer that bit of rattiness. I guess that's, I can't think of another word, but he is that sort of bulldog like player who is going to lead from the front and from example. And even today, I think, you know, Werner going off for Johnson, I liked that, like quite early, because Timo can be a bit hit and miss, and mainly on the miss side of that. And even Kulusevski, there's moments with Kulusevski where I like what he's trying to do, but then I feel like he's even in two minds about what he wants to do on the ball occasionally. And like, I still don't know what the perfect Tottenham front three is. And the fact that we always keep saying, like, oh, we need to go dip into the transfer market is really, really hard. So I think Richarlison probably still not up to the level of starting a game, but I'm hoping on Thursday he does.
Ricky, what do you think about the starting 11? Were you surprised to see Højbjerg in there?
Okay, I'm back. You know what? For me, I called for it. I called for it. When talking about the starting 11 going into this game, we knew that Ben Davies was going to be playing left back more than likely. And I, you know, because Bissouma has been off it the last couple of weeks, the last couple of months, really, it's so much so that I think in the last three games he's been taken off at halftime, or if not at 60 minutes. So I think there has to be consequence for your action or inaction. And I've seen Ange do that many a time. And for what Holly was saying there earlier, you know, Højbjerg, for me, he is a Viking. He is a warrior. He has been there. He knows what this game's about. He knows what this game needs. So I was one that called for him to be in that midfield. I wanted Bentancur alongside him as well, because I thought that he's silky skills, but also he doesn't panic when surrounded, and he can kind of wriggle out of really tight spaces when he's at his top form. So that's the midfield that I called for, really. With Richarlison, I had a feeling that he wasn't 100% fit. So the team that he went out with today was the team that I called for, you know. But I think that there's been many a fans that Højbjerg has split. And for all his endeavour today in that first half, I think the other side of it, and not just the own goal, but there were like misplaced passes, and there was a couple of kind of just not great interplay, where he just basically done a 1-2 and then ran into the Gooners. I think that's a lot of the reasons why some fans wouldn't cry if he left this summer. In fact, some fans are calling for him to leave this summer. We do need an upgrade in that position. But for today, that's the player that I called for. But even that, when it wasn't working, the subs that Ange made today at the times that he made them were the ones that I was calling for. Apart from Lo Celso for Ben Davies. I didn't see that one coming. But Saar coming onto the field, and he came on, and his energy, you know, and his kind of ability to cover ground, fantastic. When Richie came on, we saw a presence up there. Not just somebody to head the ball, but somebody to hold up the ball, somebody to get niggles and to get aggressive and to wind up the Gooners. I mean, I don't know whether you saw this, Chris, you probably didn't see this, but on one of the corners that they scored from, I want to say it's the Havertz one. I want to say it's that one. But on one of the corners that they scored from, Ben White was around Vicario, and he wasn't doing anything, but do you know what he was doing? He was just pinching and messing up with his gloves. He was just pinching his gloves and trying to pull him. But that was getting Vicario to be like this, and it was a distraction. So now you're looking at this guy, You're not looking at what's coming at you. Or you're worried about him. Now you're conscious that he's doing something. He's trying to wind me up. What's he going to do? What's he going to do? You know, and those moments that we have to look at. And I think that someone like Richarlison would have done the same up the other end.
Well, I was going to say exactly that, Ricky. Did Spurs need to show a little bit more shithousery today in a game like this?
Yeah, we needed a Lamella today, bruv. Like, we needed some Lamella vibes today. It's definitely what we needed. And I'm happy it didn't come from someone like Romero, because, you know, it can go a bit over the top sometimes. I think Romero kind of had a different kind of grab the scruff of the neck and pull your socks up to go and make something happen. But we definitely needed some type of, like you say, Scheiserhausery, to kind of just wind them up, because they were too comfortable. They passed the ball too comfortable. They transitioned too comfortable. It was a bit too easy at times for the Gooners. And we needed somebody like that to wind them up, to get them crying, to get them throwing their hands up in the air. And, you know, we saw that in the second half, just a little bit too late.
Polly, let's come to you. Let's talk about the match incidents. After 15 minutes, of course, Arsenal took the lead. Pierre Mihoibier heading in to his own net. I know we've gone on about set pieces for quite a long time during this podcast so far, but do you want to talk us through that first goal?
Again, it's just zonal marking, and it winds me up because it's all the time. But again, because he doesn't know really where he is, he kind of gets the wrong side and heads it into his own net. So it's kind of like the start of the end with that kind of set piece. It kind of, again, it just alludes to the fact that it's something we need to sort out. And that was quite evident from 15 minutes in.
Polly, do you expect Pierre Mihoibier to leave in the summer? Because he hasn't started a lot of games. Of course, he started today in the North London Derby. But would you expect him to leave and Postecoglou then to reinvest that into new players and Pierre Mihoibier to then find a new challenge elsewhere?
I think so. As much as we love him as a Viking, I think we need to stop being sentimental. I think we can still get a good price for him if we move him on now and try and bring in someone better. As we all know, we need someone in that middle just to chop things up, because we don't really have that at the moment. Like Sonny and Ricky said, that midfield's kind of still a bit unbalanced. And I think we need to find someone that's going to break the play up a little bit. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he left in the summer.
So let's come to you. In the 18th minute, Bentancur crossed into the six-yard box, headed away from the resulting corner. Romero headed just wide. A minute later, Maddison was brought down, free kick into the box, Romero against the post. We've spoken about the threat from Romero. We know that he is fantastic heading towards goal. James Maddison, the comments today, at a glance, you know, there are so many comments coming in about James Maddison saying that he wasn't good enough today. He hasn't been the same player since his injury. How would you assess his game today?
It's good you mentioned set pieces there, because we keep talking about attacking set pieces as well. When we signed James Maddison, I was like, here we go. Finally got someone who can take a corner, take a free kick. But then he's sort of been interchanging with Pedro Porro in that area of play. So I just can't get my head around Maddison, because when I reflect on the first couple of games against Bournemouth, where he scored, Fulham as well, he was operating outside the D a bit more and, you know, let him fly, having shots, pulling off more, creating passes. And now I just see him picking up the ball from deep like Harry Kane used to. But he even though he's a creative midfielder, he hasn't got the same passing range as Harry Kane. I just don't think he can do the same role as Harry Kane did in that sort of regard. But the thing is, what I find funny is I don't understand why he's dropping that deep, because it's not like when he is dropping that deep, he's looking up for someone and there's no one there really to help him. So I just feel like that's the job of the six. The six should be the one dictating the play from deep and finding passing channels. So I don't know if that's Ange telling him to play that deep, or whether he's trying to take the game, as we've said, the game by the scruff of the neck, or try and create or do it all himself. But I want to see Maddison being played like a sort of a floater type who's popping up in areas down the wing as well. But I don't know if it is because of the injury, because every time now I'm getting past Harry Kane vibes. Every time he goes down holding his leg, I feel like he's injured again. But we went from a situation where he got injured and Kulusevski was playing deep, and we're like, look at the options we have. But both of them now have been suffering with creativity for the past couple of games. And, you know, after saying like Maddison was the final Eriksen replacement, I just hope next year he can find his form, because during that first 10 games or so, people were calling him the signing of the season. He could have gone on to be the player of the season. One injury and your season can go up in the air. It has shown that. And I'd like to think Maddison is that mentality of he can build himself back up. He is confident enough to get to that next level. And I thought today he would. He loved the rivalry between Norwich and Ipswich and Leicester and Wolves and teams like that. But today I just didn't see that. I didn't see him like really G'ing anyone up as a vice captain. So it was quite disappointing from him, sadly. But then there was a few players who had that sort of game as well.
Sonny, do you think James Maddison will be part of the England squad going to the Euros?
I think he does through default, but you know, he has gone from the player who would have probably been the Jack Grealish role of coming off the bench and making something happen to maybe Cole Palmer's been amazing, but you know, there are people who will, one, either start ahead of him in certain matches or two, come off the bench instead of him. You know, you look at England's attacking options, Saka and Foden, and a lot of people who play in the wing and can play in that midfield as well. And you think Maddison hasn't really done himself any favours in trying to get himself into the team or like onto the bench. But I think he will be on the plane. It's just he's really got to have a good couple of games towards the end of the season to like start, because now like the conversation went from, and people, it was like a lot of TalkSport phone-ins have been this recently of like, oh, Maddison, you know, we got to take him. He'll be that sort of spark, to now other people being those names, being like the likes of Cole Palmer, which does happen because, you know, with Gareth Southgate conversations of squad, we do know it's one of two things. Does he pick players on form or does he go with who he's used to? And Maddison may be even in that realm, but you know, I wouldn't be too shocked if he's not in that, if he's not called up because of recent form, because he's not got too much to show for it or argue in his favour.
Mikel Arteta was asked in his press conference what was going through his mind after Tottenham's second goal, and his reply was, "I was praying." Ricky, let's come to you. Of course, Spurs were 1-0 down, 22 minutes gone. Kulusevski shot blocked at the edge of the box. Shortly after this, Pedro Porro shot. It took a deflection. It made its way through to Van de Ven. Of course, you mentioned this situation earlier in the podcast. A number of fans were extremely unhappy with this because, of course, it came off an Arsenal player. It fell to Van de Ven, and Van de Ven, what a finish. Everyone thought that was 1-1 at that point. Of course, VAR intervened. It was disallowed. Saka then went on to score Arsenal's second goal just moments later. Ricky, talk me through those couple of minutes of madness.
I mean, it's exactly that, mate. It's just exactly how you said it there. It was a moment of madness. I mean, to me, it was a nail on goal. Do you know what I mean? I thought it was 100% a goal. And then when they started having a look at the offsides, and I was just like, no, I was looking at it. The Guna defender, he's, like I said to you earlier, his body shape is open. His bottom's out. Do you know what I mean? His left foot is definitely keeping Van de Ven on. And I didn't even realise that he came off of a Guna. So I don't know what the argument was, really. I really don't. But when it comes down to VAR, you know, first and foremost, as a Tottenham supporter, I don't expect anything off of a ref or off of VAR. I just don't. And if it does go our way, fantastic. But I never expect it to go our way, if I'm honest, when those incidents happen.
Ricky, VAR, yes or no? Would you like it scrapped? Would you like it to stay in the game?
I didn't like it the moment that it turned up. But you know what? I think back to that Newcastle game, and I just don't think we have a high quality of referee anymore, or they have lost all confidence in every decision that they make. If you look at that Newcastle game, there was a penalty shout for us, and the referee made the decision and he went like this. He got the ball when he clearly did not get the ball. And that would have been his decision. He got the ball. Do you know what I mean? So not only are the referees on the field really not good enough, not only are the people that are assessing the VAR, you know, I don't want to say not good enough, but I don't know what they're looking at sometimes. You know, I think it's more the people than it is the VAR. I think if you had the right people in the right positions, it could work. But for me, it takes too long. It is a lot. It's just a lot, mate. It's just such a frustrating vehicle in the game right now. I think it sanitizes it. I think you lose, you know, a lot of that kind of passion, a lot of that the reasons that we go to games, the reason that we watch games, you know, that rush of adrenaline. I think it loses a lot of those things. And how many times has VAR been wrong this season, let alone last season and the season before? There are so many times that they are wrong. There's so many times that we've seen a squiggly offside line. There's so many times when, you know, the ref should have made a certain decision, but the VAR seen it, but the VAR can't get involved because the ref didn't do anything about it. So then we've just got to sit there and discuss it on pods like this. Do you know what I mean? So for me, I would probably get rid of it, but then I think we wouldn't get anything at all. And I just want to say one thing on James Maddison. When Sonny was speaking there, the one thing that I've noticed that he's lost is his cheekiness. Now, do you remember when he was putting the ball outside of the corner quadrant and stuff like that, and he was having a bit with the crowd, and, you know, he was very much a cheeky chappy. He was winding people up. He's missed that devilment in him. He's missed that Lamella vibe in him. Do you know what I mean? He's missed that enjoyment in him. We haven't seen that since he's been back. And I think that is one of the biggest pieces that are missing from him, because he needs to play on that edge. He needs that. He needs to have that feeling, I need to wind up the opposition. But today was a great test for him, not only for us and for all of the talk, do you know what I mean? But for England and for the Euros and all of that, to show what type of player you are. And it didn't work today. And I'm not saying he's a terrible player. I'm not saying sell him. I still think there's a lot in him, but we definitely need another player in there that's going to challenge him. And the same way that the boss took out Bissouma because he hasn't been stepping up and he's had to be subbed off, the same way he's got to take out Maddison and either put Kulusevski in there or put Lo Celso in, or do you know what I mean? Or switch up the formation or try a little something new. He's definitely got to take him out of the firing line to kind of GM up, to try and get that to try and get that fire back from him, to try and get that enjoyment back from him when it comes down to the crunch, because that's why we bought him. When it comes down to the crunch, to have a lock picker that could do this, that could break down the low blocks, that could find the spaces, that could find the passes, that kind of turn the opposition around. That's why he was there. Do you know what I mean? That's why we got him. And we've seen it from him. And this is the biggest frustration, I think, with every single Spurs fan, is that we see how good these boys can be. We see how good they can play when they're in their flow state. But when they're worrying about certain things too much, or when they're concentrating on the opposition too much, or when, you know, I don't know, they're looking at the birds in the sky instead of the ball on the bloody well floor, they lose it. Do you know what I mean? And that's what we need to get back to. And that's what Maddison needs to do. You know, so I would love the boss to take him out against Chelsea. I know it's Chelsea, but I would love him to take him out and then bring him on and see what impact he can have. We saw it with Bissouma today. When the boss brought on Bissouma today, I thought he was dynamite in there. Do you know what I mean? Again, oh, do you know what? Chris is off. All those watching on YouTube right now, Chris is off, but he's probably going to get a superstar special guest that nobody knows about. Do you know what? Let's take some guesses. I'm going to guess Sandro.
Spider-Man.
Get out of town, Tom Holland. Oh my God, did you see what I mean?
His spidey senses were tingling. That's what it was.
Yeah, sorry about that. Where are we up to?
No, yeah. I was just saying again, like when Bissouma came on off of the bench there, I thought he'd done really well. And I think that's the same thing that needs to happen with Maddison, basically. Drop him, put him down to the bench, put somebody else in there, and then if and when we need him against Chelsea, bring him off and let's see what impact he can have. Let's see what reaction he has. Let's see if he really wants it. Do you know what I mean?
Ollie, let's come to you. In the 31st minute, Timo Werner went off. Johnson came on. I believe it was through a muscle injury. That's the reason why he went off. 7 minutes later, Havertz, of course, scored from a corner, making it 3-0. What did you make of this goal?
Again, another zonal marking catastrophe, in a sense that, again, why is there not a player between Vicario and Ben White? Again, why are we not picking players up? Why are we letting things happen? And obviously, there was a point, I think I saw a steal on Twitter. Obviously, Twitter's not the best place to find your source of knowledge. But someone pushes on Mickey Van de Ven. I think it's Havertz. And I'm thinking that's still not an excuse. Like, regardless if there's contact, we still should have defended that corner properly, and we didn't. So I'm hoping, like we keep saying, Ange actually does address this going forward, and we do sort out that defensive, because again, it was just a mess all over the gaff.
Sonny missed a chance just before half time, Holly. What did you make of Son's performance today? And I feel like I've asked this question so often on this podcast this season, but what do you think his best position is?
Not through the middle. I think we knew today that obviously the two centre-backs for Arsenal on their A game, as much as that hates me to say it, they are brilliant at the back. And I think Sonny going through the middle just isn't the one. We know that Sonny likes to cut in from the side. And I think going down the middle just isn't for him, especially when he's got a go against those two big defenders. It just wasn't going to happen. And I think when we've got the likes of Richarlison, like I was saying earlier, when crosses come into the box, Sonny isn't going to be the one that's going to be headering it. He's going to be the one that's going to cut inside and have a shot from outside the box. So for me, I think we need to start playing Sonny out on the wing and not through the middle.
Holly, what did you make of the boos at half-time? Because there were a lot of Spurs fans very unhappy. I'm sure that they were booing the referees, the match officials, but of course the Spurs players as well.
Yeah, I never like booing players, but the trouble is when you're 3-0 down in a North London derby, you're going to let your emotions get the better of you. I think it was just, like you say, a combination of things, the refs, the fact that we conceded two goals in that nature as well. Not forgetting, obviously, the one where Davies is overran by Saka. It's just little schoolboy errors that I think that are very frustrating. So not that I'm condoning the booing, but I can see why the crowd were the way they were in booing the players at half-time, because it is a frustrating game, especially when you're playing your North London rivals. You want to be competing head-to-head, and we just wasn't in that first half.
Sonny, let's come to you. At half-time, of course, Ange Postecoglou brought off Benton Kerr, brought Sarr on. What do you make of Sarr's impact? And I feel like, again, this is something that was spoken about at length, particularly in the last couple of months, about the midfield. Ange Postecoglou, does he know his best midfield at the moment?
No, I don't think he does. And the problem is with this is Sarr, I think, when he came on, I thought he was very good. He looked a bit more like the Sarr we become accustomed to, who I believe is one of the most underrated midfielders in the Premier League. For his age, and he doesn't get spoken about enough as being that sort of player. But the problem is, like a few of these players, they've all fallen off a bit of form. So Ange has been experimenting in the midfield more than you could say. I think it goes midfield, front line and defence, the way he sort of experiments and changes it up. And it's knowing, I think what we do is we have players who sort of can play the 8 and the 6. And we don't know which one is perfect for them yet. Like even Basuma, it's like, could he work in an 8 more than a 6? I feel like we don't know. And same with Sarr. Like at the beginning of the season, Sarr was everywhere. Like even most recently, Villa away, the cross he puts in for Maddison's goal was sublime for a player of, like, you don't expect that sort of Beckham-style cross from him. But yeah, I feel like I'm questioning, like at the beginning of the season, if someone said to me, name Andy's best field on paper, I would have gone Basuma, Bentancur and Maddison. Then Sarr came into the mix. You're like, okay, where does Bentancur go? And he got injured. Then Bentancur came back and he was quite good. Then he's fallen off again. Basuma's fallen off since then. And so has Maddison. Kulusevski then came in and looked all right. And now he's dropped off. And just describing this is putting my head in a whirl. So, yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't know if Ange Postecoglou knows what it is. But it's funny because we keep saying about us having or needing more midfielders. Yet we have got quite a lot of different players and a vast array. You forget about Ollie Skipps there. I know he's still injured, but I feel like a lot of them will be pushed on. We mentioned Højbjerg. I think Holly's spot on with what she said. I think he's one of our most sellable assets in the sense of getting a good fee for him. I also think with Højbjerg, he has got the characteristics of a different sort of six, but I still think he's not versatile enough in his movement and passing to really like dictate the play. He's very give and go. So yeah, the midfield conundrum is one. It's a headache and not a nice headache to have at the moment compared to at the beginning of the season.
Ricky, let's come to you. Tomiyasu headed over the bar after 48 minutes. 3 minutes later, Kulusevski had a chance. He put it over the bar. A minute later, Kulusevski with another chance. He was tackled. He went down in the box. There were some calls for a penalty. And then a minute later, Saka with a great chance, shot of Vicario, who made a fantastic save. How were you feeling at that point, and what did you make of Kulusevski today?
Oh, I was frustrated. I mean, I was frustrated at that point, bro. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know whether he was going to get back into the game. I started kind of getting a bit defeated and a bit bored. I was looking at it like this and I was like, come on, please. Like, come on, Tottenham, please. On Kulusevski, he's such a kind of, I don't know, he's such a, he's just really tough to judge right now. The thing is that his physicality, his dribbling ability and stuff like that, you can see he's turned up for us in big games. Since he signed for us, he has. There's certain times that he, you know, Man City's and, you know, there's been many a time that he has been one to kind of go to. And one that we've celebrated, one that we can't wait to sing his song. He has dropped off. I do think he's probably more effective in the middle, but hasn't really had a run of games. You know, Madison's our main man there at the minute. I think, you know, there is, when he does play on the right wing, some of his play is predictable. We know he's going to shift onto his left, so it's always tough. But, I like the player in the sense of his determination. You know, he's not one to shy away from criticism, whether that be from himself or if any of you guys saw the article stroke video that he done a couple of weeks ago. His sister normally digs him out and she's like, she's raw about it. She's very blatant and she's very raw. She doesn't hold back at all. So I'm sure she's been on the phone the last couple of weeks kind of going, Cooley, get your act together, sort your life out a little bit, you know, and give him a little bit of a kick up the backside. And we see flashes of that from him. It's just not enough. It's just not a consistent, not even over a period of games, but during the game. It's not consistent enough during a game. But I still think there's a lot in him there. I still think he's a dynamite player. I still think that, you know, he needs to get more shots off. You know, he needs to get a little bit more dynamic, you know, go to the byline, you know, cut it back instead of always going up, coming backwards and then getting onto his left and then whipping it in. Like, do a bit of a Johnson and hit that byline and then bring it back into the 6-yard box. You know what I mean? Like, create something different. Try something new with the same intensity, with the same energy and with the same philosophy that Ange has given you. But try something new, man. Be brave a little bit. And I think that's what's basically happened to our whole squad, is that we've kind of gone into our shell. You know, we try and be brave for 5 minutes and then we can see the goal and then it's like, ah. And everyone goes back in and it seems like nobody wants to make the mistake up front. And by having that mentality, you always make the mistake. Do you know what I mean? You need to be brave. You need to push. You need to try risky passes and risky play. Don't just play the same patterns of play. So with Kulu, I still think there's a dynamite player in there. I still don't think we've seen a finished article from him. I still think there's a lot more to come from him. But it was a bit in and out today. It was a bit wishy-washy. There were moments that were really good from him, but there were other moments where it wasn't as great.
Well, let's come to you after 63 minutes. Ange made a double sub. Richarlison and Basuma coming on for Maddison and Højbjerg. A minute later, we were gifted a goal by David Raya. Of course, Christian Romero finished. What did you make of that incident?
It was great, actually. I know, obviously, we were 3-0 down at the time, but it was just amazing that, obviously, Romero was that high up the pitch. I still don't understand how he doesn't have head rush being that so far up, but he managed to obviously get the ball from Raya, miskicking it, basically, not realising he's there, and then bang in the back of the net. And then you're thinking, oh, my words, give us a bit of hope. Let's go and get another two. Obviously, it didn't work out quite that way, but, again, it was that belief we kind of needed, and it came from Romero again. And I know we spoke about earlier about being a player to step up, and you wouldn't think it would necessarily be centre back that's put the ball in the back of the net from a goalkeeper kind of miskick again, which is a worry and not a worry, but yeah, no, it was a great incident, and obviously the way that we obviously managed to score that goal was good in itself through their mistake this time than ours.
Sonny, after 84 minutes, Michael Oliver waved away the foul on Ben Davies in the box. Of course, moments later it went to VAR. It didn't seem to be taking too long to make that decision of awarding a penalty. What did you make of that? Because when you think Mike Oliver is probably seen as one of the most senior referees, probably the best referee in the division, and he waved it away.
It's embarrassing. Like, I feel like anyone could have seen that. All 60 2,000 people in that stadium could have seen it from any seat in the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Every fan from home, Arsenal or Spurs, neutrals. Declan Rice literally kicks him up in the air. Straight away, Gary Neville went, that's a penalty. Everyone said, that's a penalty. You just can't... I mean, I've seen... Do you know what it is? It's that penalty is a bit... It's one of those on-the-cusp penalties where people think, oh, no, he hasn't met... He was clearing it or something like that. But you can't get away with that anymore. We've had them against us. And I think we all just got a bit shocked because that's our only second penalty of the season. And I think the first one was Brentford's first game, which is wild. But... Yeah, it's a worrying turn of events where it's almost like, and I'll have my say on the VAR situation off the back of this. It's almost like VAR is just used as the fallback on anything. It's like, it's not used in the way it is. And even Ricky was describing it as it's the people, not the VAR. But VAR isn't an external being. It's a thing, it's a tool. And at the moment, it is poor workmen blaming their tools. It's like we need automated offsides from next season, which are going to come in, which are going to be amazing. Because the drawing of the lines, I mean, when I was last at Spurs and there was a chalked over decision, you just don't know what's going on. Like, it just says check in whatever on the screen. And you're like, you just don't know what's going on. Automated offsides are clear, concise, and you get on with it. And just the problem is, it's re-refereeing games, but... not in the way that we thought it should be. And we've become this issue of now debating whether we need VAR or not. But to try and improve it, to put it frankly, it's like we're just trying to polish a turd.
Ricky, let's come to you. Let's talk about Spurs' second goal. Of course, Heung-min Son scoring a penalty. He always delivers, doesn't he, Sonny?
Yeah, no, he always does, man. And, you know, I had every faith that he was going to put it away. You know, I had no doubt in my mind. I do love him as a player. He is, like, really one of my favourite players to ever play for Spurs. And, you know, again, somebody we could rely on to put it in the back of the net. But, again, you know what you're saying there, Sonny, and what you're saying there, Chris? The referee waved it away. So if there was no VAR, the referee's decision would have been that was no penalty. And this is where it gets to. This is why I'm in flux with the whole argument. It's because if it was left down to those on the field... Again, I don't expect anything from a referee because we hardly get anything from a referee anyway. Do you know what I mean? But when something like that happens, when Sonny just said it there, everybody in the stadium, home away, you know, neutrals watching at home, everybody could see what was happening, but he was the one that waved it away. Our best referee in the league. So this is where we're at right now. You know, this is what really kind of troubles me is that if we get rid of VAR, how many decisions are we not going to get, you know, even more so, you know what I mean? Even blatant ones. You know, we know from the beginning of the season when Romero got that red card against Chelsea. Now, how many incidents of the same, if not worse, has happened, you know, to other teams and they haven't even got a yellow? Forget the red, you know? So there's a lot that needs to be done for it. But again, look, back to Sonny, Captain Fantastic. I love him to bits. I do think we're missing from Sonny, him being out on the wing and having that trademark Sonny goal when he switches it onto his right or his left and he just curls it into the corner. We haven't seen that for ages. Do you know what I mean? And that's one of, you know, Sonny's strengths, being able to kind of run into space and dribble around players and then shoot from bloody well anywhere. You know, we are missing that. But hopefully against Chelsea, he gets to play out on the left wing. We have Richie up front, and then hopefully we can start to build some momentum for the rest of this period.
Well, you mentioned the Chelsea game there, Ricky. Of course, Spurs are next in action on Thursday at Stamford Bridge. We have won once there in the last 30 years, which is not good enough, and we need to go there and win. Chelsea's last six games in the Premier League, they drew 2-2 home against Burnley, beat Manchester 4-3. Drew 2-2 away at Sheffield United, beat Everton 6-0 at home, lost 5-0 at the Emirates Stadium against Arsenal, and their most recent result on Saturday evening, drawing 2-2 against Aston Villa after being 2-0 down, and they had a goal disallowed right at the death. So their last six Premier League games, 1-2, drawn 3, lost 1. Holly, let's come to you first on the Chelsea away game. How are you feeling ahead of this game? Surely we need to go there, get the 3 points and win.
be great if we don't concede any corners, but I'm not too sure if that's going to be the case or not. No, look, it's every game. It sounds so cliche, but every game's difficult. We've got to take every game as it comes. I can't not forget, obviously, today's game. The fight was there. Obviously, we managed to come back. It's just those silly errors. So I'm hoping we kind of eradicate them. Okay, we haven't got those 2 weeks to try and sort something out. But obviously, we didn't do anything in those 2 weeks. So hopefully, with this quick turnaround, we've got a bit of momentum and that passion is going to stay there to be like, right, we need to go there, get the job done, especially with Poch at the helm as well. It's got to be, they've got to know how much this one means as well for the fans, especially with obviously the running going on and obviously losing to Arsenal today. So yeah, I hope we go there and he mixes it up and we just eradicate those conceding from corners. But I haven't got much hope for that.
Holly, what have you made of Maurizio Pochettino at Chelsea? And I ask that, not so we're going to go down the route of saying, oh, Pochettino is great for Spurs. I don't want to go down that route. I just want you to see him as Chelsea boss since going in there. Now, many people will see this as an easy game because the way that they were beaten so heavily at the Emirates last week. But to show that fight and desire to come back against Aston Villa Saturday evening, and when you look at some of their other results, beating Everton 6-0 at home, they come back to beat Manchester United at home at Stamford Bridge. We know that this is a very, very tough place to go. But what have you made of Pochettino at Chelsea?
Just because I want to say Bottletino, it sounds quite nice. No, look. The thing is, for me, they've got a lot of players at Chelsea. They've spent a lot of money. And kind of sitting here and seeing that they haven't necessarily performed to the extent that the Chelsea fans will want is kind of a sense that they obviously want a lot from their team. And I don't think Poch has come in and started on the correct foot that they want. Obviously, some of my friends are Chelsea fans and they already want him gone. But I think the thing is, like all of us at the moment that have new managers in, it's going to take them time to embed what they want and their style of play. I just think with Pochettino, he sadly doesn't have that thing to fall back on because of the amount of money they've spent. I know it's slightly different with us because obviously we haven't necessarily spent as much as them, or Ange hasn't got the players in that he wants. But with Poch, it's going to be very hard to kind of swing the fans round with the money they've spent and if the results don't keep going their way. But like you said, against Villa, they managed to come back. I think Cole Palmer for them is definitely got a massive rucksack on his back and helping Poch through these games, I think, because without Cole Palmer, I think it would be a very different story as it is at the moment.
Sonny, how would you assess Maurizio Pochettino's time at Chelsea? Of course, he's taken them to a semi-final, a final in his first season. Yes, the results in the Premier League have been up and down, but when you look at the last six, if you go back to the last seven, they beat Newcastle at home 3-2 as well. So results haven't been that bad, but they were beaten heavily last week at the Emirates, but they did show a lot of fight Saturday.
I mean, to use a simple term, pants. I feel like they're a confusing side because, again, it shows that we're saying about we need to spend money, but it shows that if you just throw money at problems, it can't necessarily fix it because they've got two £100 million midfielders who can't even play with each other. I think Chelsea is... The thing is, when it makes me... I know Chelsea have all their history to fall back on and all that, you know, the trophies that they've won. But at the moment, I'd rather be a Spurs fan than a Chelsea fan. But at least we've got a manager who seems to have some sort of identity and is getting it right more than wrong, I'd like to think, with players who care. And I know it's hard to say after a defeat today, but you look at Chelsea and it is just a circus of no tactics, just Cole Palmer on his own most weeks. Their defence is shoddy. The midfield is, you know, their best midfielder is Conor Gallagher, who costs them nothing, who I don't even rate and don't want Tottenham to touch with a barge pole. Their front line is Jackson, who is terrible. He's from the Timo Werner, Darwin Nunez school of finishing. It's just a crazy team. I mean, yeah, but we allowed that. I'm not going to lie. But it's just one of those, it's just a really odd team. And even yesterday, it was just like they were awful in the first half, yet somehow pull it back. And Villa have got that in them of letting it crumble. I'm thinking of Man United when they play them around Christmas time. But the problem is when we go to the Bridge, it just doesn't, you know, they'll up their game like West Ham do as well. And I just worry for these fixtures, the next couple of fixtures. You know, today, if we could have got out of this derby with a point, it would have been so, so positive. And it just makes the remain, even like we're saying about you, we'd be happy with Europa League. I mean, how low could we actually finish? It's hard to tell.
Sonny, I feel like I've asked a number of fans, including a lot of people on this podcast in the last couple of years, what is it about Tottenham travelling to the likes of the Emirates Stadium and Stamford Bridge? Why do we struggle so much at these grounds?
I think it's mentality. And that is what Ange is trying to change. It's this Spursiness of, you know, just not turning up, you know, putting in a performance. Even today, it's like, yeah, towards the end, we could be like, that's why I'm a bit melancholy and on the fence about it today. Because I thought, as the game went on, we got into it more and we could have got something out of it. And we started okay, but it's just that middle period of like losing our heads and not knowing, like, really. it's just weird. And I don't know what it is, because we've had some good performances against the top teams. You know, the 3-0 against City this season. We beat Liverpool, even if that was controversial. Arsenal 2-0 away from home. But there are moments where, like, Fulham away, like, and just, I still can't put my finger on why Spurs do it and why Spurs can't go to the likes of Old Trafford or Anfield. That's the problem. These fixtures are all the worst ones. We can't do Stamford Bridge. We can't do Anfield. And I mean, City at home, you know, that's one of the good ones. But, you know, it might be our luck that Burnley and Sheffield United turn up when they're probably going to be already relegated. But I don't know. I feel like that's why I trust Ange to change the mentality. He always talks about it. And what he does do is he doesn't chuck players under the bus, which the previous managers did. So that's why I hope he can get the most out of these characters. Oh, where's he gone?
Oh, Ricky, back. Let's come to you. Your thoughts on Chelsea this season?
Jekyll and Hyde, didn't they? And mostly Jekyll. They've been terrible, bro. When I saw, I don't normally watch the Gooners or Chelsea, really. I try and avoid them. But when they had that game, what was it, last week, I watched about 5 minutes in the second half. And Chelsea were absolutely atrocious, bro. They had no fight, no passion, no want. And like Sonny said there, they've got 200 million pound players in the middle of the park and they couldn't tackle. There was nothing. They didn't even break a sweat. It was horrendous. And after 5 minutes, the Gooners scored their second goal. And at that point, I turned it off and I carried on doing whatever I was doing. Had a look back and I saw that they got done 5-0. And I'm just like, how bloody well pathetic. I don't think Poch is the right fit for a team like Chelsea. And I think that... What day do we play? Is it Wednesday or Thursday, Chris?
Thursday.
I think that Thursday, after the game, that'll be Poch's last game as Chelsea manager, because we will thump them and we better bloody well thump them. I'm telling you right now, we better. Well, oh my God, because they're atrocious, man. Forget this hoodoo, forget the voodoo. Let's just go out there and do something, man. Like, we owe them. We owe them so bloody much that we need to go out there and do something. After today, after Newcastle, after the against nine men, Chelsea earlier in the season, like, we owe them so bloody well bad. So it's time to put our eggs in that basket and go out there with all of that type of Romero mentality, all of that grit and nastiness, and go out there and show them what we're about, man. And we've got no excuses. Today, the Gooners, they're fighting for the league. You know what I mean? Like we've said, they're a well-oiled machine, have spent money in the right areas, and they're moving forward. You know, Man City, always the bloody well same, super consistent. Chelsea have been terrible this season. Yes, they might have a few flashy results, but all we need to do is stick one player on Cole Palmer and their whole game plan should crumble to bloody well bits. Do you know what I mean? And we should go out there and thump them. Thump them. For those 30 years, bruv, we need to spank them so bloody well bad. And then we can sing Chelsea get battered everywhere they go. That's what I want. That's what I want to happen on Thursday. But I'm not. I'm very calm about the situation, and I can't wait for the game. I think it'll be lovely.
I tell you what, it's the one ground I absolutely hate going to. It's the one I dread the most, Stamford Bridge. So Thursday will be interesting. Of course, we've got another big game on next Sunday as well against Liverpool away. Last two questions for you, Holly. Let's start with you. Score prediction for Thursday.
and where you think we will finish in the league at the end of the season.
Oh, my word. After Ricky's chat about bigging it up, I'm now thinking, yeah, let's go have them. So let's go and do them 3-1, because I still think we'll leak a corner. But I think we need to turn it around. We need to go and, like we said, they're all over the gaff now and again. Yes, like we said, they've had some big results. But I think this is our time to shine. We need that bounce back. It's going to be against Chelsea. And I think we're going to finish fifth in the league. And I don't think that's going to be a disaster. I personally think that's going to be a progression and improvement, because as much as I want Champions League football, I also know that that's going to be a big ask for next season. So I think Europa would probably be good for us. Get those players that are on the fringe that we can't necessarily ship on and put them in those kind of games. So yeah, 3-1 for me and fifth for the league.
I'm actually going to go for 3-3 and fifth. Sonny, what are you going for?
I'm going to go for 2-1, because I feel like they'll go 1-0 up and then we'll fight back. I can just see it happening, because they are poor, but I feel like they're just going to get some momentum early on in the game. But I can see us, you know, really competing with them. And, you know, after this game, I hope Ange sticks a rocket up their backsides, because it's just, you know, London Derby's back to back is just, it's so annoying and it is typical. But where we'll finish, I think fifth, because I really back us in. I just want us to. I'd love a Europa League run, because the competition's changing as well, and the Champions League teams don't drop down. That's a chance to end the trophy hoodoo as well, because there's going to be some strong teams in there. Don't get me wrong, but you know, with Italy and Germany probably getting the fifth place through coefficient, it means that their, you know, Europa League places go down, so their teams aren't going to be as strong in that competition as well. Maybe different for the likes of Spain and France. But yeah, I think fifth. Maybe sixth, but fifth.
This is definitely a positive therapy session. It really is. Ricky, what about you? Actually, before we go to Ricky, I just thought I'd say that it don't matter whether we're in the Champions League or the Europa League, we will play 8 group games. And 4 of them will be at home, 4 of them will be away, but they will be against different opposition. So it will be against 8 different opponents. Ricky? Your score prediction, where you think we'll finish?
I'm with Holly. I'm a 3-1, and at this minute in time, I'm going to go fifth. I do think that if we were to come out with a result today, I think we could have pushed for that fourth. Villa have got some tough games to come, but they've got the points in the bag right now, and it'll probably be fifth. But I'm going 3-1 Tottenham. Come on, you Spurs. Batter them. Go and show them what you're about. Don't leave that bridge without bloody well blowing the bloody doors off. I'm just telling you. Just go out there and do the damn thing, Tottenham. Please. I'm begging you.
This is why I always need Ricky Norwood on after a defeat. Holly, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Sorry you were discussing a loss with me, but pleasure to have you here. Where can people find you and what you're up to at the moment?
No, thank you. Yeah, you just find me at Holly's Hotspurs on YouTube every Monday. Just do a live show dissecting, kind of like you guys do. And I'll definitely be dissecting corners once again tomorrow, because I haven't done it enough today. I need to do it more. But no, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Holly. Pleasure. And Sonny, thank you so much for joining us for the very first time. And we look forward to having you back on again soon. Tell everyone about your channel and what you're up to at the moment.
Yeah, hopefully my debut and performance was better than some of those Tottenham players. But yeah, you can find me, Sonny Talk Spurs, on YouTube and Sonny Snelling on all my socials. And yeah, usually it's the Ange propaganda machine on my channel. But hopefully this week I've got to probably play a bit safe and, you know, preview Chelsea, but also dissect the issues and how we can solve them. I think I'm going to be doing a couple of videos on that.
Well, great to have you on. Thanks, Sonny. And Ricky, great to have you back with us, and look forward to having you back on again soon. What I want to know is, have you been ice skating since Dancing on Ice?
No, I haven't. Those ice skates got put away in the boot bag and have been in the corner of the house ever since. I needed some recovery time. And then after that recovery time, I was like, yeah, it's cold, you know, it's cold. You know, so I was like, yeah, no, it's not the right time right now. But I definitely will lay some back up and I'll definitely will give it a go at some point, man. Spent so much time and invested so much into it. I can't just let it go like that. But I definitely needed the break from it. But listen, Chris, always an honour and pleasure being on the show. Loved it to bits, even though it was a defeat against them lot. Holly, always a superstar. Sonny, debut wasn't that bad, Sunshine. Wasn't that bad, brother. Yeah, man, always an honour and a pleasure to be on with you and everybody that listens and watches. Sending love to all of you guys out there. Thank you so much.
Ricky, thank you so much. Ricky, Holly, Sonny, thank you so much for your time this evening. And we will see you again on Thursday. Thanks for watching, everybody. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you Thursday. Come on, you Spurs.
Come on.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.